You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
It's Adam. I want to welcome you to The Conversation. I am excited that you are listening in. I hope this finds you well. Last week, I had a close friend of mine reach out and say, "Hey, Adam, I just finished listening to the latest episode, and you started out by saying that life is good for you and life is fantastic for you, but what about the person like myself who's struggling? What about the person like me who's broken right now?" And if that is you, I just want you to know that I see you and that I care about you. And more than me seeing you and more than me caring about you, God sees you and God cares about you. As a word of encouragement, and I hope this is encouraging, right now I'm in genuinely one of the most life-giving seasons of my life. But here's the encouraging part. Over the last 2 or 3 years, that has absolutely not been the case. Over the last 2 or 3 years, there's been many weeks that I was broken, many weeks that I was struggling, many weeks that I did not want to get out of bed, and yet God is faithful. And again, I'm standing in this season of blessing right now, just a season of peace and joy right now, but that has not always been the case. And what I want you to hear is that this season that you're in, it will not last forever. This trial that you're battling, it will not last forever. God is faithful. He is good. Again, He sees you and He cares about you. My prayer for you today is that you would run to Jesus, that you would go to Him, spend some time in His Word, spend some time praying, that you would reach out to a friend if you're struggling, text a coworker of yours or a sibling of yours or somebody of yours that you trust that loves you and loves Jesus, and just say, "Hey, can we grab coffee?" Or, "Hey, I'm struggling. Would you pray for me?" I also want to encourage you to talk with a counselor. I just even in the last week have had a bunch of different people reach out and ask for me about counselors. I would encourage you, seek out a Christian counselor. And more than anything, I'm so grateful that God is okay with us not being okay. And what I mean by that is He can handle our honest feelings, our honest emotions. And so if you're struggling, let God know that you're struggling. If you're hurting, let Him know that you're hurting. I'm so thankful that God doesn't tell us to put on a happy face when we're struggling inside. And so that's a quick word of encouragement to all of you. And I was so grateful for my friend to saying, "Hey, I'm glad you're doing well, but I'm not doing well." And I know that's true of so many of you. And so again, I do not take it lightly that you are spending any time with me, and I'm grateful for every single one of you. I want to transition to today's episode. I sat down with a longtime Christian artist, Jamie Grace, and it actually applies to so much of what we just were talking about. Jamie is just honest throughout this conversation about her battle with mental health, and so we talk about that, and we talk about finding quiet, which is the name of her new book, and how to find peace in the midst of so much anxiety and so much craziness that our world is going through. I thought so highly of Jamie. She talks about kind of the highs and lows of her careers and some of the trials and valleys that she's walked through, which is always so encouraging to me. It's one thing to hear about someone's success story. It's another thing to hear about someone's pain and trials and suffering. And more and more, I'm beginning to realize I have so much more to learn from the hardships and the weaknesses than I do from someone's success story. And so you will hear that throughout our conversation. As always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. I'm here with Jamie Grace, somebody that I've actually wanted to cross paths with for some time. Jamie, first off, just want to welcome you to the podcast today. Just a huge blessing that you're with me.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I just want to jump in with your story. I mean, you started singing at a young age. I was just watching old YouTube videos of you, by the way. I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is crazy." And now so much has changed over the years. So I first off, take me back even to like hometown. I'm a nerd. I love to hear like hometown, your parents got you into music, ready, set, go.
Right. I mean, the easiest way to sum all that up is I'm a pastor's kid from the South. So singing is just, it's in my DNA. It was just in the setup of everything. I was born in LA, but my family, we all moved to a small town in Georgia when I was about 1 year old. And my parents started a missionary church in Stone Mountain, Georgia. which is, you know, the PC way of saying they were serving the local community without really being paid. And so my dad was also an electrician, and my mom is all of the above: homeschool mom, youth pastor, worship leader, interior designer, everything to make ends meet. And I just grew up in this small little town called Lithonia, making music and being homeschooled and just super creative. Not necessarily, I don't like to be like, oh, I'm creative because I'm talented, but honestly, just because my mom was just so pro creating. Something that she always used to tell my sister and I was to create something every day. And she didn't want it to necessarily have to be good. We didn't have to share it with anybody. She just always had books in the house, journals, weird instruments that she would find at yard sales. And she would say, look through the encyclopedia and see if you can find what this instrument is called and if you can learn how to play it. Like, that's just the kind of like weird homeschool vibe that we grew up with. It stuck with us. And it's honestly still who we are to this day. My sister is my claim to fame. She's the poet Morgan Harper Nichols. And so, you know, when people see her work, I'm like, yeah, man, that same blood runs through me, guys, stream the songs. So that's how I grew up. And,
yeah. I was going to say for kind of crazy. So my dad is an electrician as well. And secondly, you seem so normal from being homeschooled. You're like, where's the delete button, the hang up button on this?
No, when people say that, I pretend very well.
Yeah, the experimenting. I'm just curious. Are you like are you playing guitar at this point? Like piano? Like what are you like? What experimenting wise? What does that look like?
So they put me in guitar lessons when I was 7, per my request, because I just had such a fascination with all these random yard sale instruments that my mom would find. But I broke my guitar when I was 7 and a half. So that didn't last very long. I don't know if you're familiar with like the toy horses that are like on a broomstick and there's like a horse head at the top.
Oh, yeah.
So I rode my guitar like that. I was very analytical as a child, and my parents never told me not to ride it like a horse. So I felt like it was totally acceptable. And once I broke it, my parents said, if you want another one, you're going to have to pay for it. Which I did almost 10 years later. So that was my first introduction into like formal guitar lessons. But I wasn't diagnosed with ADHD at that point, but I feel like looking back, it's kind of obvious that structured lessons weren't a good idea for me. So it was just like playing instruments around the house. And my mom is a really good singer. My dad's a really good drummer. So it was just every day.
So you start experimenting. Like what was the first kind of moment where you started doing more than just experimenting? Again, like you were so young when you started getting noticed. How did that all happen? And what did that look like?
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, I had a full list of every dream that I wanted to accomplish. You know, I'm going to age myself here, but my age and older, we had a show called Zoom that used to come out on like PBS Kids. And I wanted to be on Zoom. I wanted to work in the circus. I wanted to be a musician. I remember when nobody get offended, but I remember when I saw Raven Simone on Disney and I was like, oh, black girls can do it too. I'm next. Because, you know, I wasn't really aware before then. So I wanted to do all the things all the time. And when I was 9 is when I kind of hit a speed bump, if you will, in the road, when I started to have the very obvious symptoms of Tourette syndrome, which is a tic disorder, OCD, ADHD, and anxiety. And so from about age 9 till almost 13, 14 years old, I was completely emotionally just distant and disconnected from anything that looked like a dream. And it wasn't until I was 14 that I was like, maybe I should go back to the whole music thing that I used to love. So yeah, it took a while. It was like 14.
Wow.
Well, to me, that's a long time because those years seemed really long, but I really didn't do anything dream related or anything remotely hopeful for by about 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
That's wild. And then what changed? What changed? And again, what happened there?
It was a couple different things. Man, I always the privilege that I have in the kind of home that I was given, and the kind of foundation that I was given. My mom and dad, they are not your typical pastors. They're just not. And I don't say that to put down any other pastors, but it wasn't until I got to college that I realized how toxic a lot of the faith-based environments were that a lot of my peers had experienced. Like, it broke my heart to hear some of the things that they had been told about Jesus and the things that they hadn't been told about grace. I'm like, how do y'all know all this stuff about the disciples, but y'all don't know how to spell grace? You know, I was very confused. And so, you know, when I was going through all of those things when I was a kid, I had these parents that simultaneously grieved with me and cried with me and allowed me to feel what I needed to feel while also pouring into me and preaching around the house and praying with me. And I didn't realize what a privilege that was until, I mean, I appreciated it. I just didn't realize how rare it was until I got older. And so one of the, well, a couple of different scriptures that were very important to just our church community and also to my parents, Psalm 30 verse 5, which is weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. And just the ability to see joy and weeping coexist. You know, oftentimes that is, oh, well, you're going to weep, but then God's going to heal you and fix you and everything's going to be fine because there's going to be joy. Bruh, that verse says nothing about the weeping going away. And obviously the weeping will go away because look at me right now, I'm not presently weeping. But that scripture, it's a song that we used to sing at my church, and I heard it over and over, but just, I remember this one Sunday morning, I was like 14 and like, I was listening, but like, you know, sometimes like you just also thinking about lunch. And I just remember I was like, for real listening. And it hit me. And I was like, wait, what if God wants me to have joy even while I'm hurting? What if God loves me even when I'm sick? Like, what if I don't have to be physically healed for my soul to be healed? And I just remember falling in love with Jesus all over again and just being so grateful for his grace over my life. Another thing, you know, kind of a classic like yearly Baptist service is the seven last sayings of Jesus Christ. And so we do that service every year. And I always fell in love when I would hear whichever pastor was saying it that year, when he or she would say, my God, why have you forsaken me? And I just remember every year being like, chill, Jesus. And then when I was like 14, I remember being like, bruh, Jesus gets it. He feels forsaken too. And just being allowed that, like a lot of people think that going from this possibly depressed 14-year-old that's completely isolated and very physically ill because of very rapid and physically harmful tics, to then 3 years later being on a tour bus full time, making music and traveling the country. A lot of people think, oh, you must have gotten your physical healing. But the true, and God can do that. Like, I know he is capable because I've seen him do that. But the beauty, at least what God has taught me in my journey, is that it's not about, oh, have I gotten what I wanted out of this? But it's, I learned how to give the glory to God, even though things didn't turn out my way. And so that's kind of where that shift was, is when I walked into the freedom to feel what I needed to feel and still give the glory to God. And once, I mean, it wasn't like it was specifically overnight, but it was honestly just a few days for me of just acknowledging that and realizing that. And I literally went and uploaded a YouTube video like within days, because I was like, if God has given me this joy, I got to share it. I got to tell it. Now, of course, for me, that meant I'm going to make an improv video about being homeschooled because I'm just a dork like that. But I'm like, it'll bring joy. Like, that's what I want to do, because God has given me his joy and I got to share it. And I mean, I've got YouTube videos scheduled for the next few weeks. So here I am, almost 29 and still doing the same thing.
you figured something out that it took me a lot longer to figure it out. I feel like, honestly, I just am learning in the last 2 years just about suffering and pain.
Yeah.
And how to find joy and what redemption looks like. And I think as Christians, we're quick to throw the Jesus bumper sticker on everything, and everything's good now, right? Because Jesus. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm actually hurting right now. I'm actually grieving right now. I'm still broken right now. One of the things I realized about myself is I don't know if I've ever grieved things. Mm. And just like been okay saying, hey, this really sucks.
Yeah.
Instead of like, but Jesus, everything's good. And thank God for Jesus. So it's not belittling anything about Jesus. I don't know where I'd be without Jesus. But the fact that it's okay to grieve and feel pain, and even in our suffering, what we learn about the heart of God, I wouldn't want to replay the last 3 years of my life. And yet I think I wouldn't want to delete them either. Because I wouldn't be the person that I am today. So that's pretty amazing. So technically speaking, music wise, how the heck, like, what happened to get you on a tour bus around the, like, tell me just that part, like, just musically.
Yeah. Man. I was posting YouTube videos all the time. My grandfather, you know, he saw a lot of the hurting that I was experiencing, and also that my sister was, you know, experiencing, going through that with me. So he brought over a drum set and a guitar. So I started playing drums when I was 14. My sister was playing guitar. We've gone through so many changes. We were really obsessed with heavy metal at the time. So I built a double bass pedal for my drum set. And we
what?
Metal band. Yeah, we were like a thrash metal band for 2 years. It's fine. And we were just playing it like all the local youth groups. It was great. Super normal for two black girls in Georgia. And we're just doing our thing, playing the youth group circuit for a couple years. And my sister was like a little embarrassed to be the lead singer. So I was like the lead singer from the drums. We mostly just did a bunch of like showbread covers. And then we were posting YouTube videos of that. Then we discovered like singer-songwriter vibes. So then we were just like, oh, no, we're going to do like Bob Dylan, KT Tunstall, like that kind of music, like Johnny Cash kind of stuff. And then, it was just this culmination of, and then I had my moment where I was like, no, Jonas Brothers, Miley Cyrus, That's So Raven, like, that's what I sing. So we were just singing all of the above and more. And then when I was 17, a kids television show called iShine reached out to me, and they were with TBN. And so they had found some of my videos. Still to this day, don't know like what made them reach out, but thanks. And so I was 17 and I did 2 years with their show, with their tour. And then that led into a record deal. I had, I did two albums with a record company. Wow, I'm 90 with a vinyl shop. And I did two albums with them. And then at 24, I became an independent artist. And so I've always really admired people like, and this is not like an endorsement of content, but
yeah,
I've always really admired like the improv artists and stuff like that. Like your Maya Rudolphs and your, you know, like Oprah Winfrey, like Jamie Foxx, like people, and granted, no offense to Jamie Foxx, I don't know any of his songs. So that was not like an endorsement. I know from the Black Annie. Thank you very much. But I just like, I've always admired when people can do like 18,000 things at a time, yet it still works. Like, I'm an actor, I'm a singer, I'm a producer, just kidding, I'm an acrobat. And so that's always kind of been my thing. And kids show found me and they were like, okay, well, we're producing a Christian kids version of SNL. Do you want to be a part of it? And so I did that for a little while. And yeah, I just, you know, I just load up on caffeine and see what happens every day. Just kidding, kids, be healthy.
So you did the albums, and then you kind of went independent, like you shared, continuing to tour. Like at what point, because I know you're married and have a little lady as well. She's a sweetheart, by the way. So share that. Like, did you push pause on music? Keep like share that part of things too, just to get the kind of where you are right now, basically.
Right. So I met my husband about 3-4 years ago. Time doesn't exist anymore, but I met my husband a couple years ago at one of my shows. Actually, my sister and I were playing, it was like a show / a young adult event about like telling your story. And my sister has a song called Storyteller. So it just was very seamless and just made a lot of sense. And I was super excited about it because I was never boy crazy, but I was always very vocal about the fact that I was ready to be wifed up and that like I wasn't about to do that whole it'll happen when you least expect it stuff. I was like, no, I expect my God to move. I will not ever be least expecting anything from him. And so I was prepared to be wiped up from like 18, just ready. And the Lord had me wait and I'm grateful. And so I met my husband in an autograph line. I saw his face and I was like, hashtag mine. And, you know, long story short, he had no idea. A year later, I stalked him on Instagram through a friend of a friend of a friend because I'm really good at that kind of stuff. And he DM'd me and we started dating long distance. And so that was when I was in 2017 or 18 that we got married. We've been married 2.5 years and we have a daughter named Isabella. And it was never intentional for my music to kind of like be chill while I was like new wife and new mom, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't ever think that I would go from being 17 living on a tour bus to like suburban mom living in Arizona. Like I didn't ever like homeschool mom. Like I never thought this would happen. I thought that like we would be on a tour bus with like maybe a nanny. I'm just kidding. Not that there's anything wrong with having a nanny. That was not my plan. But I always thought that we'd be like this touring family. And God had other plans. When I was like 24, God called me to step away from my record I was on and to really seek his purpose for my life and not man's. And so it does look very different now. You know, I started out producing my own music because I couldn't afford producers. And now I do it because I love it. And so it's crazy how I had this kind of concept of like what God was doing in my life and what I thought it was supposed to look like. I thought I was going to be touring full time for the rest of my life. You know, COVID, no one's touring. But I'm grateful that it looks different and I'm grateful for the way that it is now. Like I get to live close to my family. I get to be with my daughter at home every day. My husband, you know, works a normal human job and we love it. Like I'm still making music when I can. So, you know.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
Today's episode is sponsored by our friends at Faithful Counseling. I just gotta ask, is there something currently interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? For many of us, that can be anxiety, depression, fear, or even broken relationships. But this is where Faithful Counseling comes in. Faithful Counseling is a worldwide counseling service that makes professional counseling accessible, affordable, and convenient so that anyone facing life's challenges can get help anytime, anywhere. Faithful Counseling offers 4 different ways to get connected to a licensed counselor. You can sit down for video calls, phone calls, live chat, or instant messaging. Every counselor at Faithful Counseling is licensed and has over 3,000 hours of experience. If you think Faithful Counseling is for you, you can sign up today and be matched with your counselor in 24 hours or less. Faithful Counseling can help us to live our healthiest lives in the comfort and safety of our homes. Be sure to check out Faithful Counseling at faithfulcounseling.com/theconversation. Again, that's faithfulcounseling.com/theconversation. Now, back to the show.
Is there parts of it that you grieve that like, hey, this was what I kind of thought was going to happen and this is what became reality? Like, was there any grief in that?
Most definitely. I mean, you know, when my husband and I were, courting, if you will, that was a huge thing. I told him, I was like, look, man, I'm only going to marry somebody that wants to go on tour because I'm not leaving my husband behind. And like the first tour after we are married, actually the only tour that he's ever been with me on. And it was a great tour. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, we were driving an SUV around the country with a couple friends, very different from a 12 bunk tour bus. And part of me grieved it. Part of me was also like super into it because I was like, this is so cool. Like I got to have from age 17 to 24, like that was another part of it too, is like from ages 17 to 24, my life was centered around me.
Yeah.
it's just all about me, what I wanted to eat, where I wanted to live. Like, I felt so grateful I was able to afford to get my parents into like a home they loved. Then I was in a home that I loved. Like everything was just set up the way I wanted things to go. And there's nothing wrong with that. I did definitely pray, and I don't really think you have to be careful what you pray for, because I think God's going to do his thing. But I did definitely pray, like, God, I just want to serve. I want to serve my family. Like, and even if that looks different, and then God walk away from the label. And I'm like, hey, Jesus, I meant like, I want to serve on a bus. Like, that's God. I want to serve on tour, Jesus. And God's like, well, no, that's not, you know, that's not what I meant. So, there are moments where I grieve it for sure, because I miss it. And I don't think it's totally out of the question to do it again in the future. I would love to show my husband that side of me, you know, like that,
yeah,
that busybody side of me just hopping on the road. I mean, he is such a champion for the Jamie Grace part of my life. And I would love for my daughter to see it, but I know that God's purpose and plan is greater than my own. And it's always worked out so much better than what I thought. Like, I have so many plans for what my life was supposed to look like in my late 20s. And when I look back at those plans, I am so grateful they didn't work out.
I just
try to keep living in that when I start to feel like I haven't accomplished what the world says that I should have accomplished.
Jamie, I really appreciate just your candidness and your honesty in that. Like, I think that's something everybody can relate to. And even for myself, for 10 years was pastoring one of the fastest growing churches in the country. Mm. And it's a weird thing when that's no longer a title that you carry.
Right.
You know, and it's the same church, and we continue to see God do awesome things, but it's not that explosive growth.
Right.
Where it's just like, again, COVID, everybody's not where they were. But right. It's weird when that no longer is a title of yours, and you no longer have a tour bus. That can be a really hard thing, and something that often doesn't get talked about. Because now, every so often, I'll do an interview, and they'll say, "And Adam pastors one of the fastest growing churches in the country." And I just wanna hide. You know, I'm like, well, no, I actually haven't for the last 3 years. Thank you.
Like when I'm somewhere and they're like Grammy nominated, I'm like, guys, that was 10 years ago. Guys, like, cause then people are like, whoa, were you at the Grammys? I was like, yes, when I was a fetus, but now I have to get home to make spaghetti and meatballs for my child. So like, I'm still the same person. I just want a little context, you know?
yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I want to shift to your new book. It just released. Finding Quiet, My Journey to Peace in an Anxious World. And you've talked about different things that are part of your story. Where did the book come from? Why now? Just kind of go there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a couple of years ago, you know, as I was mentioning about getting my parents into this home that they loved, and I had just moved into, and I say numbers for context, not for any other reason, but I had just moved into like this 5-bedroom home in Georgia, and I was getting ready to become a foster and adoptive mom. It was right before my 25th birthday, which was the age if you're single in the state of Georgia. And so I was just kind of like, okay, like maybe, you know, this is my life. Like maybe I'll make music again one day, who knows? And then my mom, she has a nerve condition, and my parents kind of shared with us kids that they were looking at moving to California for better weather and better doctors. And so I'm really close with my parents. And I was like, my sister and I kind of got together, my sister, myself, and my brother-in-law, we kind of got together and said, we're not going to let them face this alone. So we all moved to California together. And that was great because I got to be near my family and with my family, but it was difficult because I just closed a chapter on, okay, maybe I'm not supposed to do music anymore. So I just opened the door of, okay, I want to be a mom. But then it felt like that door, it just closed as well, because I just moved to another state.
Yeah.
But granted, I moved to LA, the LA area. So I was thinking, oh, maybe I'm supposed to pursue the entertainment business. Like, that's what God wants me to do. And so I started working on stuff. I started doing stuff, took some classes. I studied at the Groundlings. I got to do all these really incredible things. And then it kind of felt like those doors started closing too. That maybe that wasn't exactly what God had called for me. I couldn't get an agent. I couldn't, you know, really get a ton of auditions. I got to do some incredible stuff, don't get me wrong. But it just kept feeling like, what in the world am I supposed to do? Then I fell in love with my husband. I got married. He moved out to California. And there was just so much life change, just so much like consistent, like doubting my purpose, doubting what I was supposed to be doing with my life. My bachelor's degree is in child and youth development and children's ministry. I got an incredible offer to be a youth pastor. And I was like, maybe that's what I'm supposed to do. Like, just stuff that at some point we have all faced, if not 15,000 times, but at least once, this fear of, if I make this turn, will God still be proud? Or should I go this way? Or should I vote this way? Should I marry this way? Should I like this? Should I foster? Should I just, like, what should I be doing? And I started journaling. Literally, I started journaling my journey to finding peace in an anxious world. And it was also because I live with my anxiety diagnosis, but I was realizing just by talking to friends and other people that, like, literally everybody deals with this stuff. This wasn't just diagnosis specific. And I shared it with my sister, again, you know, my claim to fame poet sister. I shared with her, like, this first journal entry. And I was like, bruh, like, this is what I'm going through. I just need you to read this. And she looked at me in not exact words, but she said, this isn't a journal. She's like, this is a book. You know, like any little sister of a poet, I looked at her and I was like, you don't know anything about words. Get out of my face. God didn't send you. But I was wrong. And I'm glad that I was wrong. And I'm glad that my family rallied around me. My husband encouraged me. And they were all just like, you need to share this. I have been doing a lot of podcast episodes at the time.
Yeah.
Bethany Publishers, they reached out to me about a series that I was doing on the book of Proverbs, because, like, anytime, my mom taught me this when I was like 5 years old. We're nerds, so we were reading at three, but whatever. So, like, anytime you don't know what to do, you read a proverb for 31 days. She was like, you just, like, it centers you. Like,
oh my gosh,
you start to feel like, am I doing the right thing? So I was doing that, and I was like, ooh, you know, my Enneagram 7 was like, ooh, I should make it a podcast. And so they reached out about me doing a Bible study for on the book of Proverbs. And we were about to sign the contract. They flew out to Los Angeles, like, spent all this money to come and, like, meet with us and everything. And the night before, I just had this revelation. Now I know it was God, thankfully. But the night before, I was so nervous that it might have just been me. And then I was going to, like, mess everything up. But thankfully, it was God. The night before, I had this revelation. And I said, Mom, I'm a pastor's kid that is mostly known in Christian music. The world does not need me to write a devotional. I was like, There are so many devotionals. Like, the world does not need Jamie Grace's viewpoint on a devotional. And I was like, I think I have to dig a little deeper, and I think I need to talk about anxiety, and I need to be a little bit more vulnerable. So thankfully, when I shared that with them, all aboard. So yeah, that's where it came from. It was a total accident, and I was totally supposed to be writing about something else. But God had other plans, and now I'm glad I listened. At first I was really scared, but I'm glad that this message is out there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So kind of just a couple of practical questions. So I feel like right now more than any time, anxiety and depression, and I know just everything mental health wise is just exploding through all COVID and just the divide and chaos going on. So how does a person, if you're just a few practical things, how does a person find quiet in it? Like,
I mean, I think it sounds so silly, but it's a very simple practice that everybody can implement, is just starting a timer on your phone for 30 seconds a day and literally trying to find quiet. And it can feel weird if you have a personality like mine, because quiet time is such a weird space and we don't always want to embrace it. But like God can speak through the noise. He speaks through music. He speaks through devotionals. He speaks through books. He speaks through all of those things. But we also need to make sure that we are offering our time to him.
Yes.
And giving him our time and just allowing up 30 seconds of quiet from the moment you wake up or right before you go to bed or right before, you know, if you got a life. Yeah. Maybe you got to do it right before you open the door to leave the bathroom. Like, just find that 30 seconds of quiet. And as you do that for a few weeks, move up to 1 minute, move up to 3 minutes, maybe even 5 minutes. If you can, I don't know if I could do 5 minutes, but do it until it feels like a sacrifice. Do it until you know that it's a challenge to embrace that quiet time. It's remarkable what happens. I was getting frustrated with our daughter the other night, and she didn't do anything wrong. She's just 16 months old. And she's learning that just because she says she doesn't want to drink her milk doesn't mean that I'm going to not make her drink it. Like, she was just having a hard time. And I kind of said to my husband, I was like, I need you to just take her because I'm getting frustrated. And I went and I hid under our blanket in our room for a few minutes and just stared at the blanket, just took some deep breaths. And then once I took the blanket off of my head, I was like, oh, I can do this. I'm a mom. Like, I got this. You know, it wasn't even quiet room. Like, that's the point. Like, I could hear her singing about something. I could hear him watching something about the Lakers or something. I don't even know. It wasn't even it was quiet in our home. It's just that I chose to turn off my phone. I chose to shut things out and I chose to embrace quiet within my own self and create a safe space within me. And after a few minutes, I was like, wait, I can parent. I got this. It's just milk. She'll drink it. You know, it's not that easy, but it's worth it to try as a daily practice of finding quiet.
That's so good. Is there a second, one other second, just really specific practical thing? That was so good. I think we look for like this profound thing. And right. Sometimes it's just like 30 seconds
right. Of
just being quiet. Is there a second thing that you share as well?
Yeah. This one's a little bit more challenging. I learned it from my mom growing up. Similar practice, but it's just a little bit longer. And that's just choosing to have quiet time in the car. Even with, if you have kids, especially with your kids, my mom did that all the time. And I like to acknowledge how when you have the windows down in your car and you hear the wind blowing outside or you hear, you know, a homeless person asking for money instead of just seeing them as a threat as they approach your car. When you hear sirens and they make you kind of think that maybe someone's at the end of the line instead of, oh, no, now this is going to delay us 2 minutes. That changes your entire perspective. Having that 10 minutes of quiet in the car, that 30-minute car ride. Our daughter's only 16 months old, and I tried that this morning when I was taking her to my parents' house. She does not necessarily speak English, but she was just blabbering for the first 3 to 4 minutes of the car ride. And I almost started crying as I realized how little attention I give her when I get in the car, because I'm so caught up in, I hope she doesn't cry. Is the iPad charged? And do yes. I podcast load it so that I can get some time with me and Jesus? But what if Jesus wants me to have time with my daughter? And because he's the reason that she's alive in the first place. And so I had those 3 to 4 minutes of quiet time with her this morning. It was so convicting. I'm like, I'm about to cry right now. It was so convicting and so beautiful as I just talked to her about absolute nonsense. But it was worth it. It was quiet. And so the next time you're in the car, wherever you're going, 5 minutes or 30, just try to have quiet and see what kind of conversations and what kind of moments God can breathe through that quiet time.
Yeah, that's so good. Jamie, I got one last question. I think specifically early on when you were younger, and I could be wrong, I think mental health type of things would have felt more taboo within the church world. And I feel like that's thankfully changing, being able to talk about mental health in the church. Is there anything that you've noticed like that or feel like the church needs to talk about even more when it comes to mental health? And how does Jesus come into mental health and what does that look like, you know?
Right. You know, I have noticed a shift and a change in a good way, in a positive
yes.
we are like opening those doors. You know, of course, there is always so much more that we can do, but it's so beautiful and it's so encouraging to see churches, you know, having things like that. And it really makes me very happy. We recently moved to Arizona, but when we lived in California, we were attending Saddleback Church, and they have, you know, like these mental health, you know, like classes and stuff like that. And that, oh my gosh, it makes me so happy to see churches doing things like that. I think one thing that we have to recognize is how closely knit, I want to make sure that I say this very carefully, but how closely knit mental and emotional health and spiritual health can complement each other. They are not the same thing, first and foremost. And I'm not at all saying like, oh, you have anxiety? Let's do this prayer. Or I'm also not saying, oh, you don't know if you believe in Jesus? Well, here's a prescription. You know, that's not how, that's, yep, that's just not common sense. But I am saying that as someone who personally deals with an anxiety diagnosis, I was diagnosed with postpartum depression when our daughter was a few months old. I have definitely recognized and realized throughout my entire life that my anxiety is heightened when I'm in a different place spiritually. And I cannot stress enough the power of prayer and the power of intentional music. And the power of intentional podcasts when it comes to mental health. Again, it's not necessarily the solution in the same way that when you have a broken leg, you probably need to put a cast on it. But it's such a good, you know, like he's the lifter of my head, you know, like that's just who he is. And so my relationship with Jesus plays such a significant part in my recovery, if you will, or my journey with anxiety and mental health. You know, it also, there are so many practical things in Jesus's life that show me that what I need to do in my own life, how Jesus had his 12 disciples, but then he had a smaller group that he was even close with. And so when it comes to mental health, that makes me think about how, you know, as much as I do share in my book and on interviews like this one, I have a group of women that know me a lot closer and a lot deeper than other people do. And then within that circle, I have about three women that know exactly when I am on medication and when I'm off medication. They know what time of day I take my medication, and they're all in a group text and will randomly text me and make sure that I've taken it when I need to. And so there are even, obviously, like I like to over disclaim, you know, obviously the disciples weren't in the Bible talking about Zoloft, but what I'm getting at is that there are things that Jesus did in his everyday life that are such good examples of how we can take care of ourselves emotionally and mentally. You know, when it talks about when Jesus wept, like such a short verse, but bruh, go cry, go feel, let it out. When it talks about Jesus sleeping on the boat, sleeping in the middle of chaos. Okay, 2020 is the hot mess express. But guess what we gotta do? We gotta go sleep. You still gotta go to sleep. It is what it is. I love, you know, the teachings of Jesus. I love following how he operated, because like it's such a cliche to say like, what would Jesus do? But like, seriously though, what would Jesus do? Like I had to learn how to do something when our daughter was a few months old. And I feel led to say this because maybe there is a mom out there that needs to hear this. I had to learn how to pass the baby to my mom while she was crying and go to sleep. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. Do I trust my mom? Yes. Like if technically my kidney was falling out, I will probably say, hey mom, can you hold this really quick? Like while I eat this cheeseburger before we go to the doctor. Like that's the level of trust that I have with my mother. She's my best friend besides my husband. I love her, but putting my crying child into her arms so that I could go sleep or shower or shave my armpits, that was nerve-wracking, but it was necessary. So when we read about Jesus sleeping in the middle of a storm and in the middle of chaos,
yeah,
because he knew that everything was going to be okay, that's applicable for our mental health too. We don't have to fight this alone. Jesus made it very clear that community is important, our village is important, but most ultimately God will never leave us or forsake us. And we can rest and we can take care of ourselves emotionally and mentally as well.
Jamie, I'm grateful for the time with you. And thanks for being willing to talk about things that aren't always, you know, the wonderful things of life to talk about. And again, Jamie's new book, Finding Quiet, My Journey to Peace in an Anxious World, go get that. Also, go do yourself a favor and follow her on Instagram. I confess that I was Instagram stalking her before the interview. The song that I was like, what? This is a fly song, is Live About It. So check that song out as well. Jamie, just again, truly thank you for the time today, and thanks for sharing the good, bad, and otherwise with us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.